water you're going to pump down. My God, you see salt water pouring down there by the thousands and thousands. You'd need a pumping station. Wouldn't you need that to keep it, you know, that wet with salt water? Yeah, I can see you talking about ground radio, huge, you know, huge fields and all. But how the heck do you do it with salt water? What do you do? Walk around with a huge fire hose and just spray it down? I mean, you'd need tons of salt water, wouldn't you think? Over.
Yeah, but I don't think they're just laying the salt water on the surface now. They have a volumetric problem. And yes, of course, the numbers we're talking about, the amount of gallons of salt water, where you get the salt water from, maybe it's coming from a nearby seashore, and you don't have to, you know, pour table salt into a vat of water. I don't think they're doing that. I think they're pumping real salt water from somewhere, from the real seaside, or from a lake, or not a lake, from an estuary, or from a the Long Island Sound, so to speak, or the Atlantic Ocean. They've got a volumetric problem. A tenth of a megacycle is their frequency. That means their wavelength is 3,000 meters, 9,000 feet, which is what? Roughly 2 miles is a wavelength. So they've got a volumetric problem. Even if you lay down radios, you're not going to lay down the radios long enough in enough directions because you don't own enough land to do that. You don't own the land a couple of miles in all directions. You don't have the freedom to do that. The best you can do is to make this great big chunk of conducting material under your antenna so that the, at least in the reactive near field of the antenna, it sees more conductor than semiconductor. Semiconductor near an antenna is bad. It sucks the power of energy and turns it into heat. That's how a bird dummy load or a heat kit antenna works. It is a distributed semiconductor. That's what that load resistor really is. It's not a conductor. It's not an insulator. It's halfway between the two, sucking up energy. So all of the volume of dirt that's under that antenna, they're trying to make it a hell of a lot more conductive. To pump that many gallons of water sounds heroic. But when you're trying to build a worldwide maritime navigation system and life and limb is at risk, and you've already decided you're going to build a million-watt transmitter, and you're willing to pay Con Ed or Loco or Lifer or whoever is supplying you power, you're willing to pay the price. If you're that enthusiastic and you're that deep into the problem, pumping a few million gallons of seawater into the dirt, in my opinion, is easy, Mel. K2KUY, K2LIW.
Yeah, I can see. That's quite a pumping operation, and I've got to continue running. I understand. I'm thinking, you know, I could say like a ham that does a lot of scavenging. Boy, oh boy. All right. So in other words, it's all possible that they are pumping the gallons, thousands of gallons of water every day into the soil. Okay, let's see. We got in the way of time. We got a heck of a lot of time left. Should I thumb through a couple more over?
I'll go for one more, Mel. And then it's getting late enough. And, you and I both get to get up beautifully. K2RIW.
Okay, let me see if I can find something that we can do. We've got to be careful. Alright, this is some of the discussions that may run long with this. Questions wanted to ask me about double-ended ZEP antennas. All right, that's another story, double-ended ZEP. This one here, what do they want to know about? Oh, here's one. All right, I can do maybe give some insight here. This is somewhat interesting. How do you calculate, you stay with the formulas, me with the formulas and all. Can you tell me, is there a procedure or a necessity for me to calculate the input speed on building a tapered vertical for 160 and 80 meters? He wants to put himself up a tapered vertical. Is there a reason that I should do calculate the input speed of this tapered vertical, Dick? Over.
I think the answer is no. That's the good news. when you go to those charts that are in chapter number 4 of the Antenna Engineering Handbook, and you can find the exact same chart on the website of WA1MBA, Whiskey Alpha 1, Mike Bravo Alpha. .com. It might be .net or .org, but I think it's .com. You go to the bottom of his webpage, you'll find these charts by K2LIW. What you'll discover is that the resistive component of the pin changes very slowly as you go from a wide dipole to a narrow dipole, or a wide monopole to a narrow monopole. And therefore, when you taper it, wavelength-wise, you're making very little difference. The reactive component moves a little bit more more actively versus diameter, but not very much. Length is the big thing. Diameter is secondary until you make huge changes. And what little bit of reactive changes as a function of diameter, whether it be a fat diameter, a skinny diameter, or a tapered diameter, the little bit of reactance that it creates compared to what you thought you're going to get is extremely easy to correct with your antenna tuner. Or you can put a shunt inductor or a shunt capacitor at the bottom of the antenna, and you can easily make the reactive component go away. So it's not a big deal, in my opinion. This is a straw man. It sounds like it's going to be a big deal. Good common sense would tell you this is going to be a big deal. It's going to make a huge change. Because for mechanical reasons, I've decided to taper the antenna to make it stronger. And I've taken somebody's design, and I'm making this modification. Is it going to explode? And the answer is absolutely not. You're making a 5% change in the design as far as electronics is concerned, and yet if you're smart enough as a good mechanical engineer, you can pick up a fantastic physical improvement in the strength and survivability of the antenna the next time we get a Hurricane Gloria. I say go for it. Don't even bother making the calculation, and unless you're an extremely unlucky guy, it's going to work like a charm. Back to you, Mel.
I remember a discussion some years ago, now of course you can correct me because I may have it all wrong, and it was about the LC ratio of a tapered element, and referred to Yagi antennas, and it's hard for me, I guess, at this time of night to recall. I know it'll come back to me later, but I remember something about that they said that the tapered vertical element is actually compared to a truncated cone, if I remember the exact word, a truncated cone, and there was a series of mathematical equations for the shape factor or something, and I think it referred to Shulkinov. Did some work in that direction. Why did it all, cost come back? Usually formulas are pretty good with these. But I remember something, does that ring a bell, anything, something about truncated cone shapes of the elements referring to Yagi's over?
Yes, it does. Shulkinov wrote some pretty complicated antenna books. Heavy on theory and equations, very light on illustration. I've seen the Shulkinov book. They're okay for people that are deep into it, but they're not fun to read. And when it comes to Yagi versus dipole, now we're talking about something very different. Mathematically, you can model a tapered antenna as a truncated cone. I'll give you that. And if you're building a simple monopole, ground plane, quarter wave, half wave, not to worry. When you're building a Yagi, because the electrical width of each of the elements of the Yagi is a critical parameter. And because your Yagi has got 3, 4, 5, 10, 15 elements, the phenomena builds up. You take somebody's Yagi design, it's a known good design, and it's got a whole lot of elements, and now you start changing the diameters of those elements, the length of those elements, or tapering those elements. That starts building up on you, and yes, you may end up with a very different design. And there's a reasonably good chance it ain't going to be a great design until you do some modification to it and do a retuning job because of your taper. It is very, in the case of a multi-element Yagi, for instance, on 20 meters, it's very tempting to taper the elements, a bunch of telescoping pieces of tubing to have mechanical strength and physical lightness and low wind load. Very tempting to taper those elements. So if you're taking somebody's design that wasn't tapered of a Yagi and you're tapering it, yes, you better be a little bit more careful and do some retweaking or recalibrating or recalculating or whatever. But a simple monopole, I say no. Yagi, yeah, you got to be a little more careful because of all these cumulative effects you get there. Back to you, Mel. KQRIW.
Okay. I don't know why certain things I just sit in my mind, but if you were, I remember there was something, why I can't, I just say my mind right now, it seems to be a fog, I guess, a little too much this week of doing other things, mathematics and everything, and sort of throw me off, but why does something come back to me about truncated cones and factors like that? What would they, I remember Schopenhauer, he referred to, remember I did read over some of his books, why, because I like to torture my life with that, always. And I remember something to the fact that he described, what was it, the M or N factor, Dick, am I off base, over?
Okay, M factor may be length to diameter ratio, length to width ratio. That can be compared to element length, or it can be compared to wavelength. And various guys use various letters. Jasek's book, I think, calls it the L factor. And maybe Shulkinoff calls it the M factor. And maybe Krauss calls it the J factor. What letter they assign for their particular method of analysis may not be the important part. But when it comes to a multi-element antenna, an array, things build up in funny ways. And so there you got to be a little bit more careful as you're making a drastic change to somebody else's known good design, like tapering the element. Back to you, Mel.
Hey, you know, I got to think a little bit more about it, but I don't remember why. There was a whole discussion that I once read, and it had a lot of reference to Schopenhauer, and a number of formulas that referred to any kind of element, whether it be vertical or part of the Yagi, I know that was, I know Schopenhauer, yeah, advanced antenna theory. I remember that one quite well. It is a very complicated book, extremely complicated mathematics. And maybe today with a handheld calculator, or you can sit down. And I know they had two factors. One was the M factor, was for normalizing, was the length of and tapered antenna element, and the N factor was for normalizing length for tapered something else. But I know he had two things that they referred to there, and whether or not it was just for Yagi or for any kind of vertical, you know, whether or not, in other words, if you say, let's see, if I took an antenna for, say, 3.8 megahertz, and say that the diameter at the base is 3 inches, and it tapers 60 feet up to 3/4 inches, well, you mean to tell me the tapering will not have much of an effect on the vertical feed points and peaks at that frequency, Dick, over?
Believe it or not, Mel, that is exactly what I'm saying. And by the way, LD, length to diameter ratio, is the main thing that's in the Jasek curves, or the curves that are in the Jasek book. He didn't derive those, but they're very good curves, and he's repeating them. Even though you've got a 3-inch diameter at the base, and to your eye, it looks very substantial, to a simple ground plane light antenna, a single element antenna, length is the dominant factor. The phase delay that the length creates is the dominant factor. The diameter at the base will make a little bit of difference in strain capacitance at the bottom. That's going to add an extra 100 picofarad or 20 picofarads. At 3.5 megacycles, that ain't very significant. We're talking about a change in reactance from infinity down to a few thousand ohms. That's still an open circuit, so to speak, as far as the capacitance is concerned. So your eye will see a big difference when you've got 3-inch taper at the bottom versus 3/8 of an inch up high. But lengthwise, you haven't done much. Inductance per unit lengthwise, you haven't done much. Retuning of that antenna is a rather minor factor. And that's what those curves are going to tell you, in my opinion. So I think that one is somewhat of a straw man, Mel. Go ahead.
Okay. Roger. I don't remember. You know, that's the trouble. I could have sworn it. And the, there were specifics, you know, about the, discontinuities of tapering. And I don't remember if it was, I thought, you know, that it referred to any kind of element, whether it be, you know, a part of a Yagi or a part of a vertical, tapered verticals and all that stuff and all. Maybe I'm reading too much into it. All right, so basically you think that you just go ahead and put this thing up and you should have no problem with am I correct, over?
That's my prediction, Mel. And even if worse, you did have a problem. And if you're a good scientist, step by step you analyze it, you peel the layers of the onion, you find out what's going on, and you correct for it. That's going to be a little bit of a lens correction or a little bit of retuning of your antenna tuner. When it comes to the radiated pattern of a fat monopole versus a skinny monopole, you would be very hard-pressed to be able to measure a difference in radiated pattern, therefore measure any difference in gain. It's going to be an extremely minor effect. Now, when it comes to fat and skinny elements, tapered elements, in the case of a Yagi, not only is there an accumulative effect as far as what little bit of detuning each element has and how you're accumulating them. Second of all, one of the very important factors of Yagis, particularly when you're using compacted Yagis, is the mutual impedance between the elements, the coupling coefficient between the elements, turns out to be extremely important. And it does come to pass that fat elements, tapered elements, skinny elements have slight differences in coupling coefficients between the adjacent elements, and if you've got a good number of elements, that effect accumulates. I've done some peculiar things with shortened Yagi in order to control the coupling coefficient between the elements in order to make the performance come back over the bandwidth where I had to make it work. So Yagis are a different animal. You've got to be a little bit more careful there. And there's some very good Yagi modeling programs that will help you. Although as the elements start becoming significant in width, the finite element analysis technique of breaking everything up into small little pieces and then making a great big matrix that gets inverted to figure out what's going on with all those pieces, as you make the elements wider, most of the available Yagi calculating programs, modeling programs, become pretty messy and start crashing. So one of the Yagis that I've been having the most amount of fun with professionally, the one that I've got now going on 2 patents on the damn thing, is a particular design. Here we are in 1927, I think it was, when Mr. Yagi did his work. Let me drop. And here I am, what is it going on, 80 years later, repatenting a Yagi. And part of what's going on is that I've made a Yagi with extremely wide elements, which common sense would say, why in the world did you do that? Well, I did that for mechanical reasons, because the darn thing, you've seen the antenna. It's got to be dropped 2,000 times, 3 feet or 4 feet down on the concrete and survive. So the elements are extremely wide, springy material covered with rubber. But in the process of making the elements wide for mechanical reasons, I made what to me was a revelation of, wow, is that antenna high in performance, wide in bandwidth, and low in standing wave ratio? And you would have never found that with the modeling programs, because the modeling programs cannot handle that antenna. Now, somewhere in the world, there may be a modeling program that can do it. Not the ones that are available over the counter right now, so to speak. KQKUI, KQLIW.
Yeah, well, you know, what I'm thinking of, Dick, is because I could have swore I remember reading a whole business that this guy Sergei Shokunov wrote about tapering when he was with Bell Labs, and the book was, you know, I think I remember the name of the Gardon thing was The Theory of Antennas and Arbitrary Size and Shape. Did that ring a bell with you, over?
Those exact words do not. But I'm not a great enthusiast of Shelkhanov. You probably spent a lot more time reading his books than I have. I'm a little bit more enthusiastic about the picture books, if you know what I mean. The more modern antenna books have got a lot more illustrations. They talk to me a little stronger.
Okay, yeah, because you got to remember, Shokunov wrote that stuff in the 40s, around World War II. So I have his book here. That book is somewhere on the shelf at all. Quite interesting. I mean, mathematically, I never proofread his math, but his calculus seems to show a lot of smart there, Dick, especially when it came to tapering over.
Could be, but you got to be careful. I've seen guys come up with extremely hairy mathematics to try to explain relatively simple phenomena. I've seen it happen multiple times. And some other guy comes along with mathematics that's 5% as complicated that gives better answers. I've seen that happen a couple of times. So just because a guy has got a great big hairy equation doesn't mean that in the modern world he really knows what's happening. I think we got to start signing off now. We're running out of time. We're coming to the end of our string. And so you guys have been listening to TechNet number 1148. You just wasted the last 3.5 hours of your life. I hope you got something out of it. The price is right. That's all I can say. 73 from K2LIW. Hey, Mel, K2YEW, you got it.
Hey, Dick, yeah, I'll find Shokunov's book tomorrow because it'll drive me crazy. And I remember there was a number of different people doing similar work and all, and surely I'm going to have to just for my own, just look into that. But I remember that besides Shokunov, there was another person that doing some of that tapering experiments and all. I remember I gotta find his book. Was there a guy, Eric, before you run, Halen, a book by Halen on similar subjects, H-A-L-L-E-N, I believe, over?
You may be talking about Hollis, Clayton, and something. Those are the three authors of a book from Scientific Atlanta, self-published. You said Halen, could it be Hollis? Hollis, H-O-L-L. Why, yes, I think it is. Go ahead.
You're possibly right. Okay. I know there was some whole business about that. All right. Anyhow, just passing. All right. 73, you all, thank you for joining us again on the TechNet. And it's always been a pleasure. I'll try, I could say, to get as many of these emails answered one way or the other. And take care, everybody. Have a nice week. It's going to be a little bit on a hot side, so make sure you hydrate yourself. Don't become a statistic. Because of being in a place where not enough, especially if you know of any, people that are on advanced stage, this week is going to be one of those dangerous weeks as far as, temperature in the house. We've had a bad run last year, if you remember, with the fatalities from people not, with the weather conditions and not getting enough fluids and overheating, getting their body right to higher temperature and all. So, of anyone that's, on an age and all, looking on them. And with that, thank you. 73 to all. This is K2KEY signing out, and we'll hope to do it again next week. Take care. Good night, Dick.
Bye-bye, you all.